Final hour on this Friday, Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Jake Lyman in today, alongside Derek Mason, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, and we are now joined by Willie Donick, who has joined us for the final hour. Willie, how are you on this Friday afternoon?
Hello, gentlemen. Good to be with you. You guys are sounding great. Great to join the team for the final hour here. We got to head into New York. We got a big game coming up on Sunday.
Well, we'll talk all about that right now with Zach Rosenblatt, who joins us on our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Writer with The Athletic, covering the Jets. Zach, thanks so much for taking some time with us. Getting excited for this game this weekend, I'm sure.
Yeah, I always enjoy a trip to Nashville, so I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Well, Zach, coming off that Monday night football game where, you know, things didn't look great on either side of the ball for the Jets, what's kind of been the feeling in that building heading into week two, a short week with a lot of travel involved as well?
You know, I think the biggest thing with week one is, you know, they view themselves as a contender, and they went against somebody who's been there and done that and is a contender. They were not ready for that game. So I think that was a real good measuring stick for them to be like, okay, we have a long way to go. And now they come into week two. It really puts an emphasis on how important this game is because, you know, the Titans are not viewed in the same way as the 49ers. So if the Jets go out there and play like they did last week and they play poorly, then people are going to start getting concerned about what the season's going to look like.
And for Aaron Rodgers coming back from that torn Achilles injury, and, you know, he gets put back out there on Monday Night Football, same similar circumstances where he had the injury last year. Did it kind of feel like he needed to just get that one game under his belt to maybe feel comfortable back out there, and now he can kind of go heading into week two?
Yeah, I think there was some kind of weight on that moment. I think that is definitely fair. And, you know, the irony of, you know, he only made it four plays last year, and then on the fourth play, he got out of it unscathed, but he threw it to the guy who fumbled it away, so he didn't even get the fifth play right away. You had to wait for it. It was kind of ironic. But, you know, he got through that game. I think he showed some flashes of being Aaron Rodgers. He's clearly not like the mobile-type quarterback he used to be, but he has a good offensive line in front of him now. He only got hit twice, which is a real benefit for this team that hasn't had a very good offensive line for a long time. But, yeah, I think getting through that unscathed, feeling like, okay, this is the first game where he's actually played with his guys, and now they can go forward with the knowledge of what they experienced last week.
We'll talk with Zach Rosenblatt of The Athletic discussing the Tennessee Titans as they host the New York Jets this Sunday. Now, Zach, one of the things that the Jets could hang their hat on last season was their defense. And obviously, after that first game, their defense didn't play nearly as well as they played last season. What are the concerns with the Jets and their defense? And will they have Mosley as well as Sauce Gardner 100% to go for this game?
Yes, Sauce and Mosley will be 100% good to go. They had a couple things that came up last week, but the Jets are actually pretty healthy relatively overall. And yeah, but yeah, in terms of, you know, the biggest concern, I think everybody who watched that Monday night game saw their defensive line just not getting off blocks. They were not pressuring the passer. They were not stopping the run. And the defensive line has been a strength of this team for a few years now. They've had a rotation of guys that have been really talented this offseason. You know, they traded away John Franklin Myers. They let Bryce Huff leave, and they traded for Hassan Reddick, hoping that he could fill that role. And then obviously he hasn't even reported the team yet. So, you know, they're putting in guys who are meant to be backups. And last week it was really concerning. So if I have any concern, you know, I've said since Monday, there hasn't been many games over the last couple of years where I didn't come out of it saying the offensive line or the quarterback was the biggest concern. That was not the biggest concern on Monday. It was the defensive line. And that's a problem. And, you know, I think this is going to be a week for them to really show that was just them going against Trent Williams and a great offensive line, going against a young Titans offensive line. This is the kind of group that they need to play really well against. And if they don't, then all of a sudden there might be a little pressure on them to try and pay Hassan Reddick to come into the building.
Now, one of the calling cards of Aaron Rodgers over his career has been his ability to distribute the football to not one or two people.
Yep.
But he's been having the ability, unlike any other quarterback, to get everybody within the offense involved in the game. That didn't happen so much the first week. I think he only hit three guys, really. That was Breece Hall, obviously Garrett Wilson, and then you have Lazard. Is there any concerns based upon that? Because even Lazard, at times, he doesn't look like the same receiver he was when Aaron Rodgers had him in Green Bay. We know who Garrett Wilson is as a player. Hell of a player, hell of a receiver. But if I think if Aaron Rodgers is going to be effective the way we used to see him, he's going to have more than this, those two guys from a receiving standpoint be able to get involved in the offense.
Yeah, you know, and to your point, I think I saw a crazy stat the other day that it was literally the first time in his career that he only completed passes to three receivers, which for somebody who's played as many games as he has, that's pretty crazy. So I can't imagine that's going to be something that repeats itself. They do have a lot of weapons. I think that one of their bigger issues last week is that the defense was just not getting off the field. So the time of possession difference was something like 20 minutes, which is pretty unsustainable. And so, you know, they didn't really have that many plays. They maybe went three and out a little too many times. So I think you'll see guys like tight end Tyler Conklin get more involved. As Mike Williams gets healthier, he'll get more involved. And Aaron will start spreading the ball around like you know and everybody knows. And at the end of the day, Garrett Wilson's going to be his number one target. He had 11 targets, and Aaron Rodgers even said that wasn't enough. So I think you're going to see a team that's going to pass the ball more, and then once they start doing that, Aaron will spread the ball around. And if you end games where he's only completed passes to three players, I can't imagine many of those games are going to end in a win.
We're talking to Zach Rosenblatt. He's with The Athletic, covers the New York Jets, who are coming in for the home opener against the Titans on Sunday. Zach, anything new on the Hassan Reddick front? I'm sure at all times you've kind of got your senses up to see if anything breaks there, but it's been such a long time. What's got to happen for this to give?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. It just feels like a game of chicken that is not going to end because, you know, both have been standing on their principles, whereas the Jets say, we're not going to talk to you unless you're in the building, and they believe that it will set a bad precedent if they give a guy some money who has not stepped foot in their building, whereas the Hassan Reddick side is like, well, I deserve this money, and I'm not coming to the building unless you pay me. So I don't know where the end is. I think it seems to me like Hassan Reddick's pretty dug in, so it takes some desperation on the Jets side, and I don't know if it's going to get there. They have an owner I don't think is going to want to pay him the money that Hassan Reddick wants. And so, you know, I think there's a non-zero chance at this point that he never plays it down for the Jets, which is pretty insane considering the circumstances. I don't think there's ever been a holdout quite like this one where a guy comes to a new team, shows up for his intro press conference, and then holds out and never plays for that team. Like, it's pretty unique.
How much of a difference do you think he could make? What was the idea in trading for him? Because I think a lot of Titans fans are curious because the edge rushers for the Bears did a lot of damage, especially late in the game against the Titans on Sunday, and they're wondering what the Jets bring to the table there. But I'm sure that's why they got Hassan Reddick.
Yeah, I mean, they got him for his pass rushing prowess. You know, this is a guy that's fourth in the NFL in sacks over the last 4 years. Over the last 2 years of the Eagles, he was utterly dominant. 2 years ago, he was in the Defensive Player of the Year running. Like, this is a guy that, at his best, is one of, if not the best, pass rushers in the NFL. He doesn't bring as much in terms of run defense, but he's such an impactful player as a pass rusher that, you know, it would allow the Jets to, you know, have more of a rotation at defensive end, which they like to do, where he's, you know, dominating on passing downs, and then they have some guys come in on running downs. And without him, you kind of remove that element. There's Quinnen Williams is getting doubled more, and there's not as many blockers to pull off him, and so they're really missing a guy like that right now.
What did you think? What has the reaction been in your neck of the woods about the schedule? I going all the way out to San Francisco, and then coming into Nashville, and then they've got a pretty quick turnaround. Don't they play next Thursday? Did I see that right?
Yeah, 3 games in 10 days to start the season, and then I think they have another stretch like that pretty early in the season as well. It's you know, I think it was a bigger story when the schedule came out. I think now that it's here, that all they can do is play with the schedule they have. I do have concerns about that because, that, you know, as you guys know, they have a 40-year-old quarterback and they have some guys with injury questions like Tyron Smith, like Mike Williams, and a few other guys across the board. So I do have some concerns about that, and that's why I think this Titans game is especially important, because if they lose this one and then you go on a short week against the Patriots team that looks maybe a little better than people expected, then all of a sudden you're in dicey territory. And these Titans and Patriots games are supposed to be ones that they're supposed to win as a so-called contender. So I think Sunday's game is quite important for a week two game for the Jets.
Talking with Zach Rosenblatt, the writer at The Athletic, covering the Jets. Zach, quickly back over to the offensive side of the ball. Garrett Wilson, known as one of the most talented receivers in the league, he'll likely be matched up with Legarius Sneed a lot on Sunday. How do you view that matchup between Wilson, a guy who clearly can make plays, and Sneed, a guy who's been known to shut down opposing team's number one receiver?
Yeah, you know, it's always fun watching Garrett when he goes against top corners like that, and he has the benefit of going against Sauce Gardner in practice every day. In training camp, their battles are very fun to watch. They both win their reps at various times, and so I think that has prepared him for a situation like this. And I think the most impressive part about Garrett, he doesn't necessarily need to be wide open for not only Aaron Rodgers, for any quarterback to find him, because he can go up and he's so athletic and he's so good at route running as he's developed as a receiver that, you know, even if Legarius is shutting him down, hypothetically, I think Aaron Rodgers will find ways to get him the ball. I think so. That'll be an interesting thing. If Rodgers struggles to get the ball and Snead is shutting him down in that way, the rest of the Jets receiving core has some questions. So I think that's going to be, you know, maybe the most important matchup of this game.
Now, it's two-part here. One for the defense and really for Saleh, the head coach. What does he need to do, or what does the Jets need to do to ensure that, because obviously, you know, he's going to be on the hot seat, or he is on the hot seat, especially with the meltdown last year and not being able to get the quarterback situation right, even though you had Aaron Rodgers. But what is it that he needs to do and the team needs to do to ensure that, is it a you need to go to the AFC Championship game or you need to go to the Super Bowl in order to, you know, flat out keep your job? And then the second question to that is, from the offensive line standpoint, because we're dealing with the same problems here in Nashville, a bunch of new guys together, they're still trying to figure it out. Is that what they're going through with the Jets, just trying to figure things out with these new pieces on that front line?
Yeah, you know, in terms of Robert Saleh and his job security, I think at the very baseline, they need to make the playoffs. You know, this is a team with the longest playoff drought in the NFL, 13 years. And if they don't make the playoffs, he's absolutely gone. Then I think if they make the playoffs and, you know, let's say they get blown out in the first round, I don't think he survives that either. So I think they need to make some, they need to make the playoffs and need to make it clear that they are in contention to go on a run. And if that's not what happens, whether they win the Super Bowl or not, I have a hard time thinking owner Woody Johnson will keep them around. And as for the offensive line, you know, the Jets' offensive line has been a bigger issue in past years. You know, they brought in Tyron Smith, Morgan Moses, John Simpson. They brought back Elijah Vera Tucker, and they have Joe Tippmann at center. It's a solid group of five. They had some issues in run blocking last week, but the pass blocking was as good as I've seen in a long time. So I think, like I said, I don't think the offensive line is as big of a concern as it's been in the past, but you still need to see them do much better in the running game, because this is a Jets team that wants to be a running team.
Zach, before we let you go, I was curious. You guys actually got to see Aaron Rodgers, for a full game. It looked like he was winging the ball all over the place. He could really throw it. The question came up during this week on a podcast I was listening to. I thought it was a good question of whether they sort of held back a little bit on plays that would have him moving around a lot with the situation he's coming back from and at his age. It makes perfect sense. But do you feel like, as they get a feel for Aaron Rodgers, that you might see a little bit more vintage Rodgers moving around rather than be sitting in the pocket?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. I think the idea is that over time he'll be more comfortable in those moments, because, you know, this was his first game where he could even get hit. So, you know, I think I have questions about whether he still has the physical ability to be like a guy on the move like he used to be. We did see some of it in training camp. That's different when you know you're not going to get hit. So, yeah, I'm very curious to see if the playbook opens up a little bit in terms of him getting out of the pocket, because that's when he's at his best.
Zach, thanks so much for taking some time with us. Appreciate your insights on the Jets. Thanks again, and enjoy Nashville this weekend.
Thanks, guys. Great talking to you.
Zach Rosenblatt, writer for The Athletic, covering the Jets. Great stuff there. As we learn a little bit more about who the Titans will be facing off against this weekend, make sure to tune in to 93.3 FM, Totally Hits, Totally Nashville, tomorrow for MTSU football. The Blue Raiders will take on Western Kentucky at Floyd Stadium. Pre-game starts at 4:30, kickoff at 6. Coverage is also available on the 93.3 FM, Totally Hits, Totally Nashville app and at totallyhitsnashville.com. And also tomorrow night, you can tune in right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game for Vanderbilt football. The Commodores taking on Georgia State on the road. Pre-game at 4:30, kickoff at 6. Coverage available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Big thanks to Zach Rosenblatt for stopping by. When we come back, we'll catch up with Willie. Talk a little Vandy baseball. Kumar Rocker making his MLB debut last night for the Rangers and much more. That's up next here on Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune into 102.5, The Game tomorrow at 11 a.m. for our college football game of the week, Alabama versus Wisconsin, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. Willie and D-Mace, Jake Lyman in today, Derek Mason, Nick Frazier, and we've got Willie Donick with us now. I want to catch up with Willie here. Willie, we talked a lot about last night's game in the first hour. You know, Bills blow out the Dolphins 31-10, but the big story, Tua Tagovailoa suffering another concussion. What were your thoughts on that whole situation and where Tua and the Dolphins might go from here?
Yeah, you know, you thought as the game was unfolding, the big story was going to be, wow, what happened to the Dolphins' offense? It looked stagnant. It never really got into a flow, but that was before Tua went down. And of course, when that happened, all of the other stuff went to the backdrop, because I think there is, I would say, probably more concern for him in particular for a concussion than anybody else that I can think of in the NFL. You guys may disagree, but I can't think of anybody else.
Not off the top
of my
head.
Knowing what he's been through. So that is a big, big question going forward, because there's a lot of different sides to it, not only what Tua wants to do, but also, you know, the probably the onus on some people around him to say, look, I know how bad you want to play, but I'm taking your helmet for now. Let's take a step back, and everything that goes into that. But I hope that they proceed with the utmost of caution here. I'll never forget, D-Mace, you remember when you and Eddie George were on the air together on our show, and you guys were so frustrated with how his situation was handled before. And all of that just came, you know, streaming back for me as I watched him struggling there. And at the same time, as a competitor, I don't blame him at all for wanting to go back out there and play. And he was able to get through last year fairly unscathed. So I hadn't thought about it in a long time, but immediately, as soon as that happened last night, all of that came coming back.
Yeah, you couldn't help but to, you know, think about or sort of reflect on what he went through. And I was telling Jake, it's sort of the optics of everything, because there have been concussions in the NFL, and there have been really bad ones, especially in the past before they really, you know, took, you know, concussions and what the after effects of concussion, CTE, until they took that really seriously. The things that were going on in the NFL, you know, in regards to concussions, it wasn't good. So, but I think in today's society, what is it about us? If we don't see it, we don't put that much importance to it. But the minute we see it, now it's sort of magnified even more. Not to say that it doesn't deserve to be magnified, because a lot of times it does. But we are visual creatures. If we see it happen, we're more inclined to think like, oh my goodness, this is the worst thing that ever happened. Well, it's the worst thing that has ever happened to Tua Tagovailoa. And we saw it in real time. Not just the concussion, but we saw the first initial one where he tried to get up. He ended up falling back down. And they end up lying about it and saying it was a back injury, when knowing damn well it wasn't. And then I think the next following week or two games later, he ends up having the same thing happen to him. And then he gets taken out on a stretcher. Those are the optics of it. That we're visual creatures. So we see it, and then all of a sudden we think, oh my goodness, this is bad. And it was bad. And now you didn't see it none of last year, and people probably sort of forgot it. They probably thought, oh, he's gotten over it. He's taking jiu-jitsu. He's figured out how to fall. And what have I told you, Willie? You can't just figure out how to fall in the midst of combat. You don't say, well, I just got tackled. Let me fall slowly and not hit my head. That's not how the world works. That's not how gravity works, okay? I don't care how much jiu-jitsu you were doing. When somebody slings you or you run head first into an individual, all that jiu-jitsu ain't going to help you. And it didn't help him. So people need to stop bringing that part up. Like, oh, he took jiu-jitsu. It didn't happen last show. So we figured out. Yep. We figured, oh,
and
he
you said
learned
this.
How to fall.
And you said this before. Like, this was a long time ago that you made this. So you were not second-guessing after the fact. You were saying this. You had your doubts about all of this before this happened. And, you know, I think about how much they've invested in him, because I It is amazing how things sway, where for a long time you were wondering going into last year, could he make it through a season? Then he makes it through one season, and they invest heavily in him, and then this happens. So you just never know. You just never know what's around the corner in this game.
Texter on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, brings up Luke Kuechly, who he had three concussions in 3 years, and then he retired. Very different position, being a linebacker versus a quarterback, but these are the things that these players have to weigh, especially as we talked about in the first hour, Derek. Of once you get paid, you have that security blanket now, and now you have to decide what's best for you moving forward for the rest of your life.
When did Luke retire? Was it after his fourth or fifth year, something like that? He retired very early.
I don't know if it was that early, but it was definitely it was surprising.
Yeah,
8 seasons.
Okay. Here we go. Here's what my thought on it in regards to that. And I said it earlier, and I'm going to repeat it because I want Willie to hear this. And there may have been people that wasn't listening to us at that particular time. They may be listening to us now. When it comes to this whole Tua situation or any other player, whether it be a knee injury, torn ACL, MCL, you know, Achilles, whatever, it's hard for a guy, especially a young guy, it's hard for a young guy to then contemplate retirement when he hasn't earned that next contract. Again, let me repeat this. It's hard for a young guy, I don't care if you're a first-round pick or a seventh-round pick, it's hard for a young guy to have those injuries, and it may be career sort of thought injuries, like I need to really think about this. But it's hard for guys to retire when they haven't gotten that bag yet. And I look at Tua as a prime example of that. And the only reason I'm bringing it up because they brought it up on First Take, and I'm thinking like, dude, do y'all not understand it's totally different from when he had his bag early to now? That first round bag or that top 10 bag is nothing like the bag he got now. Nothing like it. So when you're playing in that first couple of years, you're always thinking like, okay, if you get hurt, I need to come back. I need to do the things necessary, one, to help the team, and then two, I want to make the big dollars. I want to be one of those guys. So you try to go out there because you understand as a player, the longer you're on the sideline, the less likely you will be able to get that bag and less likely you will be able to retain your starting position. So what do players tend to do? They go out there and they put their health aside because to them, they're thinking, I need to just get one or two more seasons. I make that bag for me, for my family. So I'm going to sacrifice everything I need to sacrifice. I'm going to be selfish in the fact that what I'm doing may just well cut my life expectancy down in half. But you know what? I got that bag now. I can provide for my family. I can provide for my grandchildren. Until that happens, I'm going to keep pushing myself. Now that I've gotten that bag, now I can approach it a little bit different. And maybe that's what Tua's thinking now, that, okay, now I've gotten that guaranteed money that no matter what, they can't take it away, at least not the first 2 years. The other money, they'll do a settlement. If he can't play, they'll do a settlement, and he'll get whatever he needs to get and probably some more, through other collective bargaining agreements. He'll get more. But I'm sure he's thinking now, I've made enough money. I've secured that financial stability for me, for my kids, for my grandkids. Now just maybe I can walk away. Maybe that's the decision he's more inclined to lean toward now. Maybe he can say, you know what? Enough is enough. I can walk away because I've accomplished what I wanted to accomplish first and foremost, and that was making enough money so that when I do leave, whenever I choose to leave, when I do leave, I don't have to worry about it. I'm good. My family's good. We can go and do something else.
Yeah, and it's tough to see. We hope that he ends up being okay, and it's not as serious as maybe it looked initially. But, TD just texted me another player who retired in year two, Chris Borland.
Linebacker
yeah, with the 49ers.
San Francisco, yes.
TD says 100-plus tackles, two interceptions, and a sack as a rookie, and he retired in year two because of concussions. Mm-hmm. Chad from Chattanooga on our text line says Austin Colley, the wide receiver from the Colts, he dealt with a lot of concussions. So there have been situations like this, just maybe not with a high-profile quarterback like Tua.
Yeah, quarterback, and you know, I could see, you know, defensive players choosing to retire a little bit early, especially linebackers. There was another linebacker, I think, another San Francisco linebacker ended up retiring.
Patrick Willis retired a little early.
He only played like eight seasons, and he still was at the top of his game, I believe. And he ended up retiring a lot earlier than what people expected.
Yeah, 8 years as well. So exactly. Him and Kuechly had the same length.
Of you know, because they think about it a little bit differently when they've amassed what they feel they need to in order to live a life that they've gotten used to. So now I can walk away.
I don't know what that decision is like. I never will, I don't think. But I understand that would be the thinking. I just hope that you make the right, you know, the soundest decision, and you wouldn't put your, you would really listen to the advice of the doctors before you made that decision for that reason. And I think too, D-Mace, there's probably that deep down competitor in some athletes. I think of some hockey. There's plenty of hockey players too, I think, that have been faced with this and stop playing due to multiple concussions. They have a lot of the same issues that football does. There are some parallels there. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's probably been more than one athlete in the past. And I don't know. I certainly don't. I'm not speaking for Tua I'm not trying to make an assessment on Tua specifically. But in a general sense, there's probably a few athletes that have had a lot of people say it's time to stop playing. But just that competitiveness, mm-hmm. not necessarily the sound financial decision, but it's like I don't know anything else but to play. I want to play until and there's probably some people that have played too long because of it. I'm hoping that the awareness and what the studies have shown here recently have helped influence and help people make the right decision more now.
But a lot of it do. I do believe a lot of it does depend on the financial gain.
Yeah.
Or, you know, what's the risk?
Risk-reward.
Yeah, risk-reward. Okay, the risk is my health. The reward is the financial gain that I will.
And there's that be there for my team, right?
Exactly. That's the other, it's all being there for my team.
A lot of people, they're willing to put it on their line for their team, and that's tough, right? Because I think mm-hmm. the team would say back to them, hey, I know you're there for us, man, but you got to make the right decision for yourself.
And I'm sure Tua will eventually, you know, whatever decision he make, he will think it's the right decision for him, and then the right decision for his family, because a lot of times he's going to be selfish, and it's not selfishness out of something bad. It's selfishness out of, I want to make sure that everyone else is okay, regardless of what's going on with me. That's just how, I don't want to say men, because there are a lot of women that think that way too. I think I gave the example earlier about, you know, an individual, you know, I dealt with this, you know, when we were trying to have children, when I was married with Marcy and you know, certain health issues, and you know the risk based upon those issues. But because you so much so want children, you feel that, okay, the risk is worth it. You know, because I want children. I don't care necessarily what happens to me, but if I can bear children, if I can help raise my children at least for a period of time, then that's the risk that I'm willing to take, rather than to say, take both of my ovaries and everything else, and now you can't, you know, physically have children. You can still have them, but you can't have them naturally the way you want to. So I think not just athletes, but I think people in general go through these sort of, as we would call, life and death sort of decisions. And they're made every day. It's not just solely, you know, exclusive to football players or hockey players or boxers or MMA players. Everybody goes through it, and everybody's selfish to an extent. But their selfishness is not really about them. It's about, I'm being selfish because I want to help the people that I love. And sometimes it's just like, yeah, we understand that, but we want you to be selfish and do what's best for your health, not for us. But it's hard to tell a football player, or it's hard to tell a mother that, when that this is what they want. You know, so that's where I'm just coming from with that.
Hopefully Tua gets some time to take a step back, mm-hmm. look at the big picture, talk with his family, and make a decision on this. And, you know, again, I keep saying it, hopefully everything ends up being okay from the most recent concussion, and it's not as serious as it may have looked last night. Quickly, because we have Take It to the Bank coming up, Willie, want to get your thoughts on Kumar Rocker's debut last night. Obviously, that's a guy who was huge for Vanderbilt baseball back in 2019 and 2021. Long road to get to the big leagues, but four innings, one earned run, seven strikeouts last night against the Mariners.
Yeah, he had a couple detours before he got that opportunity, so I was pumped up. I was really excited for him. You know, it was interesting. The game was in Seattle. It was late last night. You know, you had this Tua story, so there's probably not that many people in Nashville that got to see it. I hope people saw the highlights, and I would, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, you want to get a little adrenaline rush, watch his four innings last night, because it will warm your heart, especially if you know anything about Kumar Rocker. And, of course, if you're a Titans fan, Kumar is the son of Tracy Rocker, the defensive line coach for the Titans. He was given permission to fly out there last night, and his parents got a chance to watch his debut. That was really cool, too. I told the story yesterday. His dad was not able to see his no-hitter, his probably signature moment. And he had a number of signature moments when he was at Vanderbilt, but his maybe biggest moment, he threw a no-hitter against Duke in the Super Regional in an elimination game, and the Tennessee staff was not willing to let Tracy Rocker drive to Nashville and watch that game. I was really upset about that at the time, still am to this day, so I'm glad that Tracy got to see that. And I don't know Tracy at all, but I just know as a dad, you want to see big moments like that, and Kumar came through last night. Four innings. Only one run allowed, seven strikeouts in the four innings, and he had 17 swings and misses, 13 on his slider. And Vanderbilt fans are going, oh, yeah, I know all about Kumar's slider. I've seen it. It's electric. And for all that he's been through with the arm injuries, being turned back by the Mets, which I'm still not very happy about, and thrown back into the draft, had to play independent ball for a year. Then he had a major arm injury, which is what the Mets were worried about when they decided to pass on him, he would not be denied. And so his career really looks like it's moving on an upward arrow, and I could not be happier for him.
Really cool to see him out there last night. If you want just the Cliff Notes version, go find Pitching Ninja on Twitter. He had a few good clips of Kumar Rocker last night. A couple swords out there from Mariners batters. And reunited with Jack Leiter. Those two guys will be staples in the Rangers rotation for the next couple of years, hopefully. So really cool stuff from Kumar Rocker as he made his debut last night. We'll take our final break here on Willie and D-Mace. When we come back, it's time to Take It to the Bank, presented by F&M Bank. We'll get to that next here on this Friday. Willie and D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.
Here comes the money.
You can take that to the bank.
Here comes the money.
It's the final segment on a Friday, which means it's time to Take It to the Bank with F&M Bank. Less worry, more living. F&M Bank. Visit one of their 20 locations throughout Middle Tennessee and Southern Kentucky or online at myfmbank.com. Jake Lyman, Derek Mason, Willie Donick, Nick Frazier here on this Friday. Dr. Crane, take it away.
Yes, thank you very much, Jake Lyman. Yeah, I'm going to give a little score update from last week. Willie, we're down at the bottom, but we'll get there. We'll get to the top. Right now, it's D-Mace at the top at 10 points. Adam in second. Willie, he has 2 points. I have four.
How did I get two? How did I even get two? I don't know where I got the two.
So in week one, you picked Florida. You put all your eggs in the basket, got you 0 points. Week two, you took the Giants to win. That did not happen. And then you also took Tajay Spears and Tony Pollard have combined 150 yards, and they had a combined 126. So I gave you 2 points.
So how do I get two?
Degree of difficulty,
charitable.
Willie. That's degree.
You're giving them out. I'm taking them.
Yeah,
but,
might as well.
I was expecting a zero.
Well, you got some points on the board. That's all that matters. So as for last week, though, I will recap. Let's see. Adam had Will Levis under 224 yards passing. That happened. Pollard, 50 yards rushing and 25 receiving. 50 yards rushing and 25 receiving. That did not happen. NWI to record the first touchdown of the season. Did not happen either. And Legarius Sneed to get an interception. Did not happen. So, Adam, Adam got one out of, one and a half out of four, I guess. So he got a four on that. D-Mace over here had his laundry list that he decided to share with everybody in Nashville.
It was only four.
It was five.
Three.
It was five.
We had to put a cap on it.
Yeah. It's like an overflowed water bucket. Like, I was like, all right, we got to tip some of this out. All right. D-Mace took the Indiana Fever. Kelsey Mitchell will be the top scorer. Did not happen. That was Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark to have 12 points and 10 assists. Half of that happened. She had 25 points and 8 assists. Let's see. MTSU to score 10 points versus Ole Miss. Only 3 was on the board there. And Tavondre Sweat to get a sack and Spears with a rushing touchdown. Neither of those things happened. So
I bombed.
Yeah. As for myself, I took Levis, 275 passing. Simmons, 2 sacks, and Spears to get the first touchdown. None of that happened either. So I got a fat zero. As for that, Jake Lyman, you are the guest picker this week, so please go ahead.
All right. Will my points be allocated to Adam if I get him right?
I mean, he did send me one in, but we can allocate them towards either Willie or I. I mean,
that's
you know
true.
What? Let's go towards Willie, yeah.
I probably won't get any points, but we'll see what happens. I will first go. I'm going to take Vanderbilt to win at Georgia State. That's not super high degree of difficulty, but we'll work our way up here.
I'm saying any Vanderbilt road win is high degree of difficulty.
That is true.
Knows as well as anybody.
I will take Vandy on the road in Atlanta for the Titans game this weekend. Give me the big boys up front. Sweat and Simmons combined for 3 sacks.
Whoa. Okay.
Okay.
And on the sound of that.
Offensive side, Tyler Boyd scores a touchdown. There's my picks for the week.
Okay, now let's clarify this.
4 picks, Derek.
No. Jake's picks doesn't go to Willie.
No.
Okay, because Nick did say.
I'll take it.
Nick
I wasn't
did say.
Anything, but
okay, Jake, your points are giving away. No, that's his by himself. Okay.
I'll be the celebrity guest picker.
Exactly. He's the celebrity guest picker. There you go.
All right, D-Mace, what do you have on your laundry list
today? All right,
today?
You know I got to go to the WNBA at first. I'm going the Vegas plays the Fever. Is it Fever or Fevers? It's Fever.
Fever, yeah.
Indiana Fever. Caitlin Clark, I predict a double-double. Asia Wilson will lead all scores. And I'm picking Vegas to win that game. So that's 3. And then one more. The Titans. I'm going with the Titans. Calvin Ridley scores his first NFL touchdown as a Tennessee Titan.
All right. Willie, what you got?
Okay, I'm going to say 2 or more takeaways for the Titans on Sunday. That's what I'm shooting for. I'm hoping that the defense is aggressive and they get the takeaways that they need if they're going to have a chance to win this game. So let's just officially say over 1.5 takeaways for the Titans on Sunday against the Jets. And the other one I'm going to go with, I just see trouble brewing for the Bengals right now. I don't think T. Higgins is going to play on Sunday. They still got all the drama with Ja'Marr Chase and all the time that he missed. There was questions about Joe Burrow. How are you feeling? And they're going to Arrowhead, where they've played really well over the years. But I like the Chiefs minus the 6 against the Bengals.
Okay.
All right. As for myself, I'm taking the Titans to win this weekend. And I say Tajay Spears has a game and has like 50 yards rushing. No, not 50, 50 yards receiving and a touchdown. And Florida beats Texas A&M.
Okay, quickly before we go, everybody's picks. What's your prediction, Jake, on a Titans game this weekend?
I'll go Jets.
Jets, sadly. Score?
24-21.
Willie?
I hate predictions. I'm gonna say Titans pull it out. 19-17.
All right, and myself, I got the Titans winning this game. Got to be in a close game. 17, Jets 20, Titans.
All right, Titans 20-17.
There we go.
Love it. That wraps us up here on this Friday. Appreciate you guys letting me jump on here. It's been fun. Stillman Company up next. Jake and TD at 6.
Good job, Jake.
Appreciate it. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Be love on your people. Have a wonderful and blessed Friday. Peace.